This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area, Friday, December 28, 2012. Yesterday, the Bureau of Land Management posted a record of decision to allow expansion of the West Elk Mine, one of three North Fork coal mines. This will allow Arch Coal to expand federally owned coal leases by over 1,700 acres underlying National Forest Service land. The coal leases are adjacent to existing federal coal leases operated by the West Elk Mine and will allow for the recovery of up to 19 million tons of coal and extending mining operations up to 3 years. The West Elk Mine has been in operation since 1982 and currently employs 378 people. Curbing gun violence will be one of the hotly debated issues at the state capitol when lawmakers return on January 9th. As part of our Capitol Conversations series, State House reporter Benta Berkland takes a closer look at some of the ideas being circulated.
I'm here with Ed Seelever with the Denver Business Journal and Joe Hannell with the Durango Herald. Joe, it seems like this gun debate is going to dominate a lot of time at the Capitol.
Yeah, Benta, the governor has signaled that, and at least Senate Democrats have signaled that we're going to be looking at possibly an assault weapons ban or a ban on high-capacity clips. That's no surprise at all. What happened in Connecticut, it's just hard to imagine really anything worse, shooting up a classroom full of first graders. It seems like this state and this country has crossed a line that we didn't even dare to cross after the Aurora Theater shooting, which was another unimaginable event. Just something has changed where politicians who might have been in favor of this before but were timid are getting over that, and they're willing to put themselves at some political risk, from the president down to our governor.
Ed, do you agree that this gun control debate wouldn't be as high profile or as urgent even after the Aurora shooting? And that was certainly tragic.
It was, but I don't think it would be as urgent without the Newtown shootings. And now, Governor Hickenlooper, to his credit, had come out literally the day before the Newtown shootings and said, I think we ought to bring gun control issues up. But he had no, and in fact, still really hasn't put forward any specific plans for this. It's interesting. I think what could actually avert a gun control debate is another plan that Governor Hickenlooper did put forward in mid-December, and that is his plan to pump $18.5 million into mental health issues here in the state. More importantly, as far as the gun issue goes, to allow for it to make it easier for someone to be confined involuntarily because of purported fears of them doing harm to themselves or others, and make it a lot quicker to get mental health records into the system to prevent people with mental health issues to buy guns. Now, I mean, these are probably the two proposals that will be most universally embraced as far as things that can prevent future gun violence. If those were to pass early on, there might be less of a fight because people might say, we've done something already.
Democrats control both legislative chambers. Joe, do you see a party fight about how far to go on gun control?
Well, these are still Colorado Democrats we're talking about. And there's a kind of a wide variance of experience and philosophy among people in that party. And there are also some urban and suburban Republicans that maybe are not so pro-gun as perhaps a few conservative Democrats. There aren't a whole lot of rural Democrats around, but the hunting culture is very important on the Western Slope. They're going to have to tread very carefully to make sure that they have hunters and sportsmen on their side when they do gun control and focus it more on this proliferation of military-style weapons. One thing I'm not hearing, though, or haven't heard so far from Colorado politicians is something that just really can't be done in the State House, and that's just some problems in our culture with a glorification of violence, a seeming reliance on very destructive weapons as symbols of power. That's probably not something that you can prevent in the State House. It's something that's more the domain of clergy and parents and just societal leaders in general.
I'll be curious to see how deep the conversation goes, because if we really want to take the hard look at why our society has so many people that turn to killing strangers as a result of mental health issues, There's no easy solution for how to get violence out of the eye of the general public. But it's not been many years since other states had conversations such as limiting access to violent video games to children. And I think you could really start to see this conversation go in that direction if we start to delve deeper into this issue.
Okay, thanks. It'll definitely be interesting to follow. That was Ed Seelover with the Denver Business Journal and Joe Hannell with the Durango Herald. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver, and this is Capital Conversation.
In a related story, the Denver Post reported yesterday that the continued rush to purchase firearms in Colorado has overwhelmed the system businesses use to track background check wait times and left thousands of would-be gun buyers on wait lists that are now many days long. The uncharted territory in which the state's gun sellers now find themselves stems from unprecedented interest in guns and Colorado Bureau of Investigation's online wait time clock, which tops out at 99 hours and 59 minutes. Weeks ago, the background check process took minutes to complete. Now, CBI's processing time has moved beyond that 99-hour, 59-minute threshold. Bureau spokeswoman Susan Medina said the Bureau has expanded its hours of operation from 6 a.m. to midnight, but with about 3,000 checks being submitted a day, quote, "these are unprecedented numbers," Medina said. Coincidentally, yesterday, the Salt Lake Tribune reported that more than 150 Utah teachers and school workers took time off from their winter breaks to attend a free class on how to carry concealed weapons and respond to mass violence, such as the recent shooting in Connecticut. Utah and Kansas are the only two states that allow concealed weapons permit holders to carry firearms on school grounds. An iconic Colorado hotel is getting a major facelift. Aspen's 123-year-old Hotel Jerome has seen touch-up work over the years, from a paint job in the 1940s that turned the brick building white to major interior work in the 1980s. The latest construction remodel gives the Jerome a modern Western look incorporating Aspen's history. From Aspen Public Radio, Marcy Krivenin reports.
Workers inside the 92-room Hotel Jerome are feverishly putting finishing touches on their work. Paintbrushes move quickly along crown molding, and nails disappear into wood paneling. The hotel's slated to open soon, and it's a race to the finish. This is the first major remodel of the hotel since 1985. The building's brick exterior was power washed and touched up, and inside, new light fixtures, paint, wallpaper, and updates like flat screen televisions were added. Tony DeLucia is the hotel's general manager.
Everything was addressed at this remodel, both structurally and for the interiors. And to get the hotel to be current, to be a strong competitor in the marketplace.
The designer, Todd Avery Lenahan, is a history buff and pored over historic photos before going to work on the hotel. DeLucia says Lenahan's intention was to make the Jerome feel like the Jerome.
He took the best designs out of different decades. One of the wallpaper patterns in one of the suite bathrooms is from the 20s, and there's some chairs that'll be in the living room that are from the 30s. So he pulled out all these great, great design elements and pieces of furniture that from all these decades since the hotel's been open and incorporated them beautifully.
Just down the road from the hotel is the Aspen Historical Society. Here, pieces from the hotel's past are preserved.
We have, things like menus, Christmas dinner, 1922. Things that have Mansour Elijah as the proprietor. So that was the gentleman whose family actually owned the hotel for about 60 years through the quiet years.
Nina Gabbianelli, vice president of programming for the society, pulls out old hotel menus where dinner specials are listed for $1.30 and a side of steamed veggies went for just 10 cents. She says the Hotel Jerome has served as a community gathering place for more than a century. When it opened in 1889, it was the first hotel west of the Mississippi with electricity and hot and cold running water. During Aspen's silver boom years, hotel guests included wealthy entrepreneurs, but when the price of silver plummeted, the hotel played a different role.
The hotel operated more along the lines of a boarding house. Especially through the 20s and 30s, when coal was so expensive that a family living in Aspen found it cheaper to live at the Hotel Jerome in the winter than to pay for the coal to heat their own house.
In the war years, 10th Mountain Division soldiers stayed at the hotel for $1 a night. They were the first to envision a ski resort. Gabbianelli says the hotel has served as more than just an overnight stop.
The Hotel Jerome has reflected Aspen's story from the beginning to today, from the opulence when it opened, through the real community self-sustaining sort of attitude through the quiet years, into, you know, the innovation and the beginnings and the way Aspen kind of turned around in the Renaissance era, if you would, of the cultural Renaissance and the ski industry beginning.
The famous J-Bar.
Back at the hotel, general manager Tony DeLucia steps into the notorious J-Bar, which has seen the likes of Hunter S. Thompson and John Wayne. In the recent remodel, the bar mostly stayed the same.
The bar itself just had to be, just restored and refurbished, and they did a really beautiful job.
How old is that bar?
1889.
The hotel's ballroom is significantly updated, with neutral hues replacing a dark Victorian design. And the hotel's restaurant, now called Prospect, was moved slightly back to its original position on the hotel's first floor. It's also lighter, with striking gold light fixtures.
The restaurant looks more like it did way back when than it has in recent years. This is one of my biggest excitements is the return of this room, because it really is back to what it was.
Another addition, the presidential suite, is priced slightly higher than the going rate for a room in the early 1950s, which was around $2. DeLucia.
Well, at Christmas, for this Christmas season, this room will be going for $5,000 a night.
The prices may have changed over the years, but DeLucia hopes the long-lasting historic and community feel of the place is apparent with the new update. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Marcy Krivenin.
Thus concludes today's newscast. I'm Brian Cambria for KVNF News.